Yo, what's good, everyone? Welcome back to a new episode of Badass Asian Dudes. This week, I have one of my friends. His name's Alan, and he's an entrepreneur currently based in Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam. You can check out Alan's blog at zenhustle.com or check out his new company, Telefuel. That's spelled T-E-L-E-F-U-E-L. I met Alan when I was based out in Vietnam, and we used to have a lot of fun together eating bomb Vietnamese food and enjoying Saigon nightlife. This was in 2017, and cryptocurrencies were all the rage. Alan and I are both super into crypto, and he had just started his crypto marketing agency at the time, so we would always talk about the moon and Lambo during those glorious days. It was awesome. Alan is incredibly thoughtful and purposeful with how he lives his life. I love how he breaks his life down into four buckets: health, wealth, relationships, and play. And also, I love the way he challenges himself and gets out of his comfort zone. Some examples we talk about in our conversation is his first time trying stand-up comedy. Damn, that's freaking hard. And also his 30-day YouTube challenge where he put out a video every day for a month. In this episode, we go through his general life story, but also a lot of other side stuff, like what it's like living in the USA versus Asia, the challenges of dating in Asia, thinking about what is most important to you in life and optimizing your life for that, challenging yourself to step outside of your comfort zone, stepping outside of your own reality, why you should listen to crazy people, and the crypto bubble of 2017. We kind of go everywhere in this chat, and I think you guys will enjoy it. Just two Asian entrepreneur dudes just talking about everything. Thanks for listening, guys, and make sure to share, subscribe, and leave a 5-star review. Also, don't forget to check out my Facebook group, Badass Asian Dudes, if you want to meet other like-minded Asian dudes that are hustling and on their path. Thanks again, guys, and let's get on with the show. Bro, how are you, man?
What's going on?
Where are you?
I'm in San Diego right now. I was just in LA. I've been on this like whirlwind 6 weeks in the US right now. It's been 4 weeks already. I got 2 more weeks to go. And you know what it's like when you're in town for a month or whatever. You got to get it all in, see all the family, see all the friends. So it's been crazy.
California, summertime, that's the best.
Anytime is summertime in California, you know what I'm saying? It's so nice here. I mean, it's just like same temperature all year round, and I love it.
I know. San Diego is amazing, man. The weather is so good.
It is. What's Seoul like right now?
Seoul, it is pretty hot. It's getting really muggy, but still, I think it's not at its peak yet, so I'm still enjoying the weather outside. Evening time, it's really nice outside. Just have dinner, and yeah, everything's good, dude.
Nice. Is this your place? Is this how you live?
Yes, this is my spot. You got to come out to Seoul. How's Vietnam?
It's good. You know, I've lived there for 5 years now, and this is what I've, you know, this U.S. trip has really solidified. I've had this growing sense of, in 5 years, had a ton of fun there. It is a great chapter of my life.
Yes.
But there's a caveat, is like, I'm ready for the next chapter. I think
my next chapter. I remember you talked about this last summer.
In LA.
Yeah.
That was crazy. Crazy running, man.
Are you still thinking about LA or San Diego, or where else would you be thinking?
Yeah. So a few things. We're applying to YC winter 2020 batch. Feel pretty good about our application. But you know, you never know with these things. That would take us to the Bay Area. I was just in the Bay Area. I took a bunch of meetings with like some angels and another accelerator called Founders 4. There are things I like about the Bay Area, but then there's things that just make it unpalatable, including like cost of living is just straight up prohibitive, and it's not getting any better with these tech IPOs.
From going from Saigon to the Bay Area would be insane.
Unpalatable.
That would be insane, dude.
Yeah. But you know, it would be a great place to be for the advancement of the business that we're doing. You know, we are taking outside capital for it. It is close proximity to a bunch of other, you know, what could come into strategic partnerships or relationships. You know, I'm okay with the city. I like SF enough. Certainly would take a hit, you know, when it comes to dating, like quantity, probably take a hit based on the reputation of SF in the Bay Area. But in terms of like quality, you know, like there's brilliant, smart people there, and including, you know, including the women. So I think like, you know, there's going to be there's bound to be some number of, you know, high quality people there in general. So,
yeah, I remember your core life things are health, wealth, relationships, and play.
Exactly. So
relationships, it might be going down there, but then wealth, who knows, it might skyrocket.
Yeah. And play would certainly, I don't know, we manage to have fun wherever we go. And I think, you know, the Vietnam chapter of my life, you know, moved there when I was 26. Now I'm 31. 5 years ago, I was optimizing for, you know, adventure, fun, lifestyle, cost of living, absolutely. And over the last 4 years, over the last couple of years, you know, the things that are more important to me in life are starting to come into focus. I mean, things like being close to my family, close to my parents, thinking about dating differently now, thinking about relationships differently now. So I think that does happen in the US. And I think to tie this back into your, you know, question about like LA versus anywhere else, San Diego, I'm leaning mostly towards LA now, but California's a great place. There's a lot of great places in it. So
for sure. Where are your parents?
They're in Maryland, outside Washington, DC, but they're pretty mobile now. They're retired. They're like digital nomads at this point. They're all over the place, and they're the only ones of our family on the East Coast. All my other aunts and uncles, you know, I'm Vietnamese American. So a lot of my Vietnamese aunts and uncles and cousins and stuff are all in like SoCal or Bay Area. So yeah, I'd be close to them. My parents come all the time. So I think for optimizing for family proximity, which is something I never would have thought of 5 years ago or longer, but it's super important now, that happens in California for me. So,
yeah, I mean, that's something that I've been thinking about a lot too, because our parents are getting older, and when you live in Asia, it's so hard to see them. So maybe you'll see them once a year or something like that.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about that a lot too. But you know, you said you've been in Vietnam for how many years? 5 years?
Yeah.
So in Korea, I think I'm going on my second year. I think I still have a few more years left. But sure. I could feel you, you know, like I'm sure just the same city, it gets old and you want something new.
It's, you know, I can't say that that's exactly how I feel.
Okay.
Saigon has not gotten old. I mean, it is vibrant and energetic and fun as ever. But I will say, and it's got a special place in my heart, and as I make this move back to the US, I'll always come back to Vietnam at least once a year. I'd be remiss not to. So Saigon hasn't gotten old to me. It's just what I'm optimizing for has changed. In Saigon, so, you know, cost of living isn't, you know, thankfully now, like I have more flexibility financially. Before, you know, proximity to family wasn't like a huge priority for me. Now it's growing in importance. The quality of the relationships in terms of dating is something that I'm taking into account now. Like before, I wasn't too concerned when I was 26, 27 about like, you know, getting married or, as my friend affectionately put it, like meeting my baby mama. Like, mm-hmm. You know, Vietnam, it's a great place to be single and to have fun and to have like high quantity of dates, you know, that kind of question. But in terms of, you know, that deeper emotional, spiritual, whatever, intellectual connection.
Yeah, that compatibility.
Yeah. You know, culture barriers, language barriers, social economic barriers, education barriers. They're real and they're not insurmountable. I mean, you and I both know people, Western expats that have found their love in Korea or in Vietnam. So it's definitely not impossible. But for me, I'm curious to see, and I have an inkling or an idea that it might, I'm Vietnamese American. I feel like, you know, an Asian American or Vietnamese American counterpart, I think makes a lot of sense. So I think putting myself in a position to make that happen. How about you? Tell me about,
Yo, everything is really good. I know exactly what you mean, just because I've been going on so many dates here in Korea, meeting so many people, and you know, we are Asian American, and so we grew up like in a certain culture, mm-hmm. a certain mindset, and it is hard to find that when you're in Asia because the cultures are so, so different. Mm-hmm. I think for me, one of the things that really helped was meeting girls that also kind of grew up in that same culture or maybe had that experience. So maybe they went to school in the US for a little bit, or they went to school in Europe for a little bit. And I think because of that, the culture, there's a similarity in culture. And so compatibility is a lot better.
Yeah, I can see that. And also, you know, based on the fact that South Korea is much more, you know, economically at parity with the US, there's not going to be as much of a social economic, you know, disparity.
Yes, you're right. Yeah, for sure.
And I don't mean to say that there's any sort of like, I don't want to come off as classist saying that. It's not an insurmountable thing, but it makes a difference in terms of, you know, just like your values and
100%. Yeah, 100%. I agree. Yeah, for sure, dude. Yeah, I definitely agree. And so I was just looking at your Zen Hustle YouTube page. And so, I remember when you did the stand-up comedy. That's insane, dude. How was
that? Yeah. It was great, man. I mean, I like to watch stand-up comedy. You know, the times that I chill out and watch Netflix, a lot of times I'll end up on stand-up, and fan of the art form, and big fan of Joe Rogan. He's a hero of mine.
Huge Joe Rogan fan. Love Joe Rogan, dude. He's a beast.
He's a fucking man, dude. Yeah, everything.
He's a beast.
About him, yeah. And is so much to respect about a guy like Joe Rogan. And you know, when he talks about, like, I don't really care that much about MMA, to be honest, but I can listen when he talks about fighting because of the way with which he's able to break things down and give you a peek behind the curtain of an art form that, you know, I'm ignorant to. And so he does that with MMA and fighting. He also does that with comedy. And in general, you know, you and I were both entrepreneurs. You know, we're familiar with the creative process of our own businesses, you know, and I love hearing about other creative processes too, whether that's like the South Park documentary where they, you know, 6 days to air or whatever it was, where they, you know, talk about the creation. It follows them through the creation of a South Park episode.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I love that. Yeah.
It's super cool to see behind the
curtains
of the creative process. And anyway, back to the stand-up question. So Joe, you know, as he talks about the creative process of stand-up and some of the challenges around it, it's hard for me to hear that and not be like, ooh, I got to give that a shot. Like, what'll that be like? And so, yeah, got a chance. My friend was doing an open mic and invited me to join her. And so it was fun.
Man, weren't you scared? I feel like when I saw that, I was thinking like, do I have the balls to do comedy mic night? And right now it's not. I don't think I'd be able to do it.
Yeah, I have so many thoughts on that. First off, yeah, I'm generally good with public speaking and presentations and business presentations and sales pitches. And I like anybody else, you get some anxiety or some nerves. But the stand-up was like by far, an order of magnitude more nerve-wracking because, you know, you're trying to elicit a like very particular reaction. And the thing that kind of like, and the reason I haven't done it since, people have asked me if I've done it since then. And I'm like, honestly, the reason I haven't is because one thing I found is that it took a surprising amount of mental bandwidth in the week leading up to it. As you know, you start to think about what the jokes are going to be, you know, the writing process and then the editing process. And then for the 2 days leading up to it, I couldn't do anything.
The anticipation.
Yeah.
The nervousness, probably.
Yeah. And then the day of, I was worthless. Like I did it on a weekday, like evening on a weekday, and I couldn't do shit all day. I was just like, just running the routine through my head, editing, modifying it. Yeah. It was a pretty, so that's why I'd love to, you know, it's the kind of thing, you know, if you're going to do it, it takes so much mental bandwidth that you really have to be devoting a lot of yourself to it. It's very hard to like dabble in stand up, I imagine.
Yeah. And seeing the behind the scenes, I think that's so cool to see. And now that I have a podcast, like I see the behind the scenes of all these like podcasts that I listen to and see how much work it takes, see the whole process. It's been a really cool thing.
Absolutely. Once you start any sort of productive or creative endeavor, you're going to look at other creators in that space differently. So, you know, you run like an e-commerce store, right? Like you don't look at e-commerce stores the same way a normal consumer does.
For sure.
I don't look at like mobile apps or software, you know, the same way that most consumers do now, because I'm looking at the UI, the UX, the choice of copy, you know, the coloring and the gradients and everything. So same thing with podcasting, same thing with YouTubing, same thing with stand-up. You can appreciate it on a different level once you've done it.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's also what you learned doing the 30 days of YouTube. How was that?
Yeah, it ended up being like 100 days. I did like 3 months in a row.
Dude, that's awesome, man. Yeah. That inspired me. I was thinking maybe I should do a YouTube video every day.
Fun. It was cool. I'm going to start doing weeklies again. And yeah, it's nice to just have a, I don't know, it's fun to be a producer of something that, you know, just like the stand-up thing, like once you kind of tried to orient myself around producing more than I consume. There's a professor at NYU, his name is Scott Galloway. He has this book and this presentation. It's called The Algebra of Happiness. And one of his rules for happiness is like, you should sweat more than you watch people sweat. Like most people watch sports. Like he's like, you should commit to like working out more than you watch other people, you know, be active. And that's an equation for happiness. I feel similarly about content creation versus content consumption, about product creation versus product consumption, about money spending versus money earning, you know, like try as much as possible in any regard to put more out there back into the world than you take in, and to be in that producer, instead of like just a consumer.
No, for sure. I really think that's super important. I try not to consume too much, you know, like Netflix, like TV. Like I try not to do that. Instead, I want to be putting stuff out there. So that's why I started this podcast. So I feel like we have a lot of similar mindsets. And just looking at your YouTube videos, your videos about mindset, about hustle, about motivation, about habits.
Yeah.
Dude, I love that kind of stuff.
I appreciate that, man. Thank you. Thank you for saying that.
Seeing all those videos that you had, like when you are just hanging out with friends, like you're going out to bars, you're going out to clubs, you don't really talk about that kind of thing. But then seeing you talk about that made me see a deeper side of you.
Absolutely. I mean, that's part of the motivation or the inspiration behind it. You know, like I think about the writers or the kind of thought leaders that I admire the most. And, you know, all of them find a way not just to, on one hand, the best way to communicate something ultimately is to just be the example of it, you know, live your life in accordance with these values or these ideas. Yeah. But the other half of, you know, that's like the product, but the other half of it is the marketing, you know, like distributing these ideas, you know, putting them out there for other people to consider, for, you know, to share with other people, to help. I think it was Tony Hsieh, he's the CEO of Zappos, and he had this concept called ICE. Anything that he put out, any content or social media posts that he put out, he wanted to either inspire, to connect, to educate, or to entertain. And I thought that was a great kind of framework that I kind of tried to follow with my YouTube. You know, I was inspired by another YouTuber that was doing dailies, and I was like, oh, like I want to, you know, that's a challenge that I want to take on. I want to learn more about it. And I want to, maybe I can help inspire or educate or entertain some other viewers out there the same way that I was watching other YouTubers. So yeah, thanks for saying that.
Yeah. So I think that was really cool. And that's actually why it inspired me, because I was thinking, oh, maybe I can show other people a different side of me.
Sure. Well. So tell me about what you want to do with this podcast. I mean, what's, you know, what was the motivation, and what's your, do you have any goals? Or
my motivation is just to inspire the next generation of young Asian dudes. So for me, I'm an entrepreneur, and then also I know a bunch of other Asian entrepreneurs. I know a bunch of Asian investors, people who are doing really well, who are living an awesome life. And I felt like this could be a good outlet where I could interview some of my friends or get some people that I know or I don't know that are just crushing it, and then pass on their stories and their advice to the guys that are younger than us. And then also, you know, the people that you hang out with, they are your biggest influences. And I feel like some people, they don't have those good influences. So I wanted to create that Facebook group to be that kind of place where people can talk about ideas or goals or aspirations and influence each other to live a more awesome, a better life.
Yeah. No, I love that. Especially as an Asian guy, you know, growing up Asian American, didn't have as many like role models or heroes, especially like masculine Asian male role models growing up. And I also grew up like a 1% minority in a very kind of white suburb of DC. No complaints at all. I have great, you know, I had a great upbringing, great childhood, and great friends from that period. But it's kind of like disconnected from any sort of Asian American community, and kind of stumbled into it and figured it out like pretty late, honestly, like into college, after college, honestly, like moving to Asia was like, you know, the first time I'd really had even like Asian American friends. But I've observed, like, I mean, I feel this way. I'm interested in hearing what you think. Like, I do feel like you're seeing on some certain subreddits that you know about or through like, not like it's not everywhere yet, but slowly through the media. And then also through like online communities, like on Facebook, like Subtle Asian Traits, a growing awareness or waking up of Asian culture, Asian American culture. It's something I see, and I'm happy to see it.
I definitely see it. Yeah. I definitely see it, and I'm really loving it. So I think that's also why I started this podcast, because I saw that and I see the potential for this kind of movement growing bigger. Mm-hmm. You know, like everyone, all Asian dudes just like helping each other, leveling each other up. And so I definitely see what you're saying. Subtle Asian Traits. There's also so many other Subtle Asian.
Love it. Yeah.
On Facebook.
Subtle Asian Dating. Classic.
Yeah.
Love it. Yeah. It makes sense to me, man. I was happy to be in the Facebook group, and happy to be on the show now.
Thank you, dude. I'm really, really glad that you're here. Okay. So you grew up in Maryland, and So after graduating from school, what'd you do?
I lived in New York for 2 years. I got a job, a brief stint, doing ad sales for Yelp. So I was calling local businesses and selling them ads, very controversial position. And then I started
Yelp
my first
is getting a bad rap these days.
Yeah. Did that for 2 years. Started my first business. I got into startups and knew that I wanted to build my own. So in 2012, I built an app called Simple Crew. It's still running. It's like a street team reporting tool for like concert promoters and music festivals and concert venues. Built that. 2013, I was accepted with that app into Startup Chile, which is a government run accelerator in Santiago, Chile.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. I didn't know that. Oh, yeah. Going back.
Chile. Dude, that has been awesome.
It was amazing. An amazing 8 months, backpacked around, met a ton of great people. And I was, you know, moved from like a nice upper middle class white town in the US to New York City, which is a much more diverse American city, to Santiago, Chile, which is very homogenous. I was a lot of people, I was the first Asian person that they'd ever seen. While I was in Chile, I met a friend who was in the Dynamite Circle, which is the digital nomad community that you and I met through.
Got it. Yes. Highly recommend for location independent entrepreneurs.
And it's, you know, it's just like private message board community for digital nomads and internet entrepreneurs. I mentioned to this friend that after Chile, I was considering moving to Vietnam, and he was like, oh, you got to check out the DC. I'd never heard of it before. Signed up maybe 4 months before I went. And I started connecting with people that were already living in Vietnam through the message board. By the time I moved to Vietnam, February of 2014, I landed and I knew like 15 people in the city already, and just landed with a plug-in community and social circle. And that set me up for success in Vietnam. I mean, it was instant. Like, I immediately felt home in Vietnam, and it hasn't changed. I still feel very much comfortable and home in many ways in Vietnam, thanks a large part to that community.
For sure. That community is awesome. Before you started Simple Crew, did you know about location independent entrepreneurs, the digital nomad life, that kind of thing?
Yeah. Senior year of college, I read 4-Hour Workweek and Rich Dad Poor Dad like back to back.
Yeah.
And so that like, and it was a nice time to read it too, because like I'd already been like shy about the idea of like doing a normal 9-to-5, but you know, it wasn't clear to me that there was, you know, which exactly what path to take. Rich Dad Poor Dad and 4-Hour Work Week combined to kind of paint a illuminate a path that involved, you know, building an asset that decouples your income from the time that you work. So you're not selling your hours or your years anymore. You know, you can, you know, build an asset that creates value for the customer while you sleep. And then that asset itself has asset value, and you can grow the cash flow in a way that, you know, you have leverage to go grow the cash flow in a way that you can't, you know, lever your time if you're just working hourly or annually. And so like many people in our community, either directly or indirectly, very much influenced by Tim Ferriss and the 4-Hour Work Week.
Yo, how did you come across those books your senior year in high school?
Sorry, senior year of college.
Senior year of college. Okay.
Okay.
That makes more sense. I was just thinking, damn, high school,
not that,
man.
Not that young. I'm not that young.
You started early.
Not that young. Yeah. It was funny. I bought that book. I bought 4-Hour Work Week for my cousin, who was entering his freshman year at San Jose State like 3 years ago or 2 years ago or something. And he flipped through it. He didn't read it. He didn't go through it yet. And now he's a senior. And I was just talking. He's like, I don't know what to do. Like after I graduate, I'm like, dude, you gotta read a fucking 4-Hour Work Week, man. Like it'll, you may or may not do anything with it, but at least know about the option.
What other books do you like? Are you big into entrepreneur books? Big into personal finance books?
Yeah. I mean, you nailed it. A lot of mostly nonfiction. A lot of books. Some of them, you know, For me, you mentioned personal finance. Obviously, Rich Dad Poor Dad. I Will Teach You to Be Rich.
Oh, Ramit Sethi. That I love Ramit.
Yeah, he's a man.
Yeah, he is a man. I've been reading I Will Teach You to Be Rich.com for so long.
Oh yeah. Did you get his new? I mean, he just dropped the second edition of.
I haven't gotten the second edition. I have the first edition, so I'm not sure if I should buy the second one. But maybe I'll buy it just to support him.
Yeah. And it's, I pre-ordered it and it was updated. It's a lot of the same mental frameworks, right? I mean, it's automation, it's leverage. So, you know, you don't have that much leverage by cutting out the $3 latte, but you have a lot of leverage by negotiating a higher salary. So scripts. So it's a lot of the same stuff. I haven't read it all the way through. I just kind of flipped through it. I said that book. I recently read, Nathan Latka's got this book, How to Be a Capitalist Without Any Capital. It's good. It's solid. It gets you thinking about like creative money making strategies and hustles, really.
Yeah. What are some ideas in there, like drop shipping, affiliate marketing?
You can buy social media influencer accounts like on like socialtradia.com or fameswap.com. You can sell like, you know, sponsored ad placements or leverage the Instagram account to like get free travel, get free, you know, free bookings, free resorts. I actually did this. I ended up buying a travel Instagram account. I actually haven't done anything with it yet, but I
yeah
got 150,000 followers. Hey, that's cool. Some other ideas. He talks about this experience he had where he like went around to different food trucks in Austin and he was just like worked out a creative investment deal where like he negotiated a upfront check that he paid this like Thai food truck. And then he gets like a Mr. Wonderful style royalty on every taco sold or every Thai dish sold in perpetuity or something along those lines. So it's like, it's kind of out of the box creative.
No, I love that. I love those like out of the box creative ideas. And I felt like the 4-Hour Work Week was that for me because I learned about affiliate marketing. I learned about e-commerce, about drop shipping, you know? So totally. I feel like those are those kind of books that give you ideas that you've never heard of. That really gets the creative juices flowing and trying to figure out how to make money without a lot of money.
Yeah, man. I think the trick with any of these books is that like you have to be willing to like, so for a lot of people that haven't been exposed to these kind of like entrepreneurship or to startups or to starting businesses, like it can be hard to suspend their disbelief. It's very different from the reality that they know. And it can be challenging to your reality. If the reality that you know is like, you know, like most people, you know, go to school and then get a job and then work in that job and you know, try to get raises and, you know, the more, much more conservative path. Sometimes, you know, if they're really locked into that path, like they can't accept the idea of something like the 4-Hour Work Week style, you know, news or lifestyle business.
Yeah, for sure.
It fucks with them, like to challenge their reality so hard. and just like show them that something else is possible. Like it, if it's almost like if they accept it, but they don't act on it, like it, it's their like ego or their identity that's being,
yeah. You know? I mean, it's like stepping out of the matrix for sure. And also I'm sure you've seen on Reddit or forums, people saying 4-hour work week is a scam. Like don't read that book. It's a scam.
Yeah.
Like that's crazy. That's seriously crazy.
They just lack imagination and creativity. Yeah. Like
exactly.
Or their ego is like, prohibits them from being able, it's, you know, it's a kind of, I hope to not sound too crude, but it's a similar, I draw the analogy of it's similar to like, if you read, you know, men's dating advice, like pick up stuff or maybe the, and that could, that's a, you know, big topic and that can go to a dark side. There's a dark side of that. And then there's a, I think there's a very productive side of that. And in the same way, a guy that, there are guys that just can't let themselves believe that there's anything you can do to improve yourself in that regard, because that would put the burden of responsibility on them to make that change. They can't allow themselves to believe that change is possible in whether it comes to personal finance or starting a business or improving their sex life. They have to externalize. They can't let themselves internalize that if they haven't taken action.
No, I agree. I know exactly what you mean. And on my website, I have a reading list and there's, you know, the game is on my recommended reading list.
Sure.
Because if you read the game, that's stepping out of the matrix. It's thinking, wow, I can improve my dating. I can learn how to date.
And I
feel like entrepreneurs especially, they have that, they know that they can improve themselves in anything. They gamify life. Like everything about life is a game, you know, and you can improve every single skill that you have. And it just takes practice and stepping out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, man, absolutely. And practice stepping out of your comfort zone. And then maybe the first part is just going back to what I was saying earlier, just suspending disbelief, like reading the 4-hour work week or reading the game or reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And believing that the author is telling a truth that is a reality that you can adopt as well. Like some people just can't let themselves, you know, they read something like 4-hour work week and they just can't allow themselves to believe it.
Yeah.
Cause that means they have to take action, you know, or live a normal life. So
maybe we're different. Maybe we're mentally a little different that when we read those kind of things, we think, wow, that is possible.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. That the ability to, the desire to suspend disbelief, to want, you know, I feel like maybe there's like, you know, a small minority of people that can, that are like actively seeking out these kinds of alternatives and this kind of, you know, ways to unplug from the matrix. There's some people that are actively very much against it. And then there's a broad middle that probably are, you know, maybe open to it, could be swayed, but just don't know to look for it, don't know it's there.
Yeah, for sure. So Saigon, you moved to Saigon, and then what happens next?
Man, I mean, that pretty much over the course of 5 years takes us to today. And
we got to go to the crypto.
Sure.
Crypto.
we'll go there. We'll go there. I will just say, you know, about the lifestyle in Saigon before jumping into that is, you know, it's been like, you know, really benefited from, you know, the first business I started was bootstrap, so no outside capital. So I was able to live off of like $1,000 a month for the first year, you know, or two, and then reinvest that money in the business, which I, you know, was able to grow much faster than it would have been in the US. And so from a financial standpoint, that helped extend the runway, give me more money to reinvest in the business. And then also access to travel. So being able to get, you know, like going from Ho Chi Minh City to like Bangkok or Taipei or Korea or Bali or Singapore or Jakarta, like it's as easy as getting from like Philadelphia to Washington, D.C. to Baltimore to New York to, you know, I don't know, Atlanta, Columbus. Like, and so I got to like experience a corner of the world and then eventually, you know, check out Europe and stuff too in a way that like, I don't know, it was really accessible. Yeah. So for someone, you know, at the time I was in my 20s, like it was the right move for the right time. So that, you know, was a special chapter.
For sure. That's why I love living in Korea too. It's so easy to access everywhere. Just go to Tokyo or exactly what you said, Jakarta, Bali,
sure,
Taipei.
Yeah, man. And then the crypto community, to your point, is massive in throughout Asia. And so, you know, we connected over crypto early when you were visiting Vietnam.
Yes, we did.
When was that? 2017. That was
during the hype. During the peak. Yeah. How did you first get into crypto? Or how did you first hear about crypto?
Oh, man. Well, you know, I've been working in tech and startups for a while. 2013, I heard about it, but I didn't take any action. And in Startup Chile, there were some Bitcoin projects, Bitcoin exchanges that were early that were in my batch in Startup Chile. And it was always, if you think back to the first person that you heard about Bitcoin or Ethereum through, they're the same kind of like crazy hair, crazy look in their eyes, just like a little bit nutty. And
that definitely turns you off.
I literally since come to like, if any, like I'll go to these conferences and hilarious. If the guy with the crazy hair and the crazy eyes, like if they talk now, I listen. I'm like, what are you on now? And I haven't taken any action on this.
Yo, that's a great rule. Actually, I should start thinking about that. That is a seriously great heuristic to think about for sure.
Yeah, man. Even then it goes back to what we were saying, like suspending disbelief, like, I remember I rented my apartment in Vietnam when I left for like 3 months. I rented it to, in 2014, to a guy who we started talking about Bitcoin, and then he was telling me about Ethereum. And it's the first time I'd ever heard of Ethereum. It's like 2014, 2015. And it must have been less than $5 at the time. And I was like, and he's telling me about like, it's like based on the same technology as Bitcoin, but it's there's the Ethereum virtual machine, which will let you publish applications, and it runs in a decentralized computing network. And I'm like, how does that fucking work? Like, I'm familiar with traditional software, centralized software architecture, where you create an application and you install it on a server in the cloud, like AWS, and then people access it from their clients. And I'm familiar with, like, you know, that makes a lot of sense to me. And so conceptualizing what a dApp, what is now understand to be a dApp, like conceptualizing how that works and how it would run is just like baffling to me. So I didn't think much of it. Of course, Ethereum grew to be what it is today. So,
okay. So I know that you know marketing. Have you ever heard of like the rule of seven, where you have to like touch the customer seven times before the customer makes a decision?
Yeah.
So I feel like when you first hear about like Bitcoin or Ethereum, like you just kind of like pass it off. You just brush it off. But you got to hear it multiple times from different sources, from different people. And then you think, huh, actually, this is a real thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So maybe it goes back to the thing we were talking about earlier, like, you know, the minority early adopters, the minority laggards, you know, forget about them. And then like the fat middle. And so, you know, there are some people that are out there looking for exactly what, you know, Bitcoin, for example, offers, like the hardcore libertarian, anti-authoritarian, you know, crypto anarchist. And as soon as they read the original Bitcoin white paper, they're like, they get it, and their eyes light up, and they're like, this is going to change everything. And then there's, you know, those would be like the ultimate early adopters. And then maybe I and probably you fall into like perhaps early majority, where it's like, it gets distilled. We hear it a few times. We start to see it in the wild, and we're like, we're on board. We're like, fuck yeah, we become brand champions. And then the adoption curve follows. So we're probably on the, you know, early majority, or maybe even end of early adopters. But then they're like the guys with the crazy eyes and the crazy
guys.
Hair.
I love that. I seriously love that. That's an amazing rule. And what I really like is that now that we're entrepreneurs, I feel like we're always looking for that next trend. We're always kind of like have an eye out to see like what is like the next new thing. And so I love that we have trained ourselves to kind of look for those crazy people.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're it's just funny to think about. Like I sometimes wonder how many times, especially early on, like when you're starting something, any business, like I'm doing this now, I'm visiting family in San Diego. I'm in the middle of launching a new product, and my family, like when my family asks like how my business is going, and I'm explaining to them like, yeah, so selling the last business, and now I'm starting this new thing. And I can see them just being like, what? Like, and I'm explaining this new project, and they're just like, I feel like I'm the crazy one. Like, I don't have crazy hair, but crazy eyes, maybe, like, to the next person in line, you're the early crazy one.
For sure. Hey, sometimes I think that like I'm in like a cult, like a crypto cult. You know, like Andreas Antonopoulos, they call him Bitcoin Jesus. And sometimes I just try to think like, do I sound like a crazy person when I'm talking about crypto?
Yeah, man. Like, you sound like a crazy person when you're talking about crypto. You sound like a crazy when you're talking about Asia. And when you're in the US, when you're in the West, you sound like a crazy person when you're talking about starting a business to someone. Honestly, like generally being someone who can suspend disbelief and visualize things that don't exist as a builder myself, sometimes when people explain new ideas, like new app ideas or new software ideas to me, and I'm like, I'll listen to it and I'll be like, yeah, we'll see. You know, like,
I agree. I know what you mean.
It's hard. Yeah.
It is really hard. Okay. So you get into crypto and then you started the company Chainfuel.
Yeah. That kind of happened accidentally. 2017, I kind of, you know, alongside you and everyone else. I mean, you did a great job of very disciplined staying in the blue chips, if you will, like the Bitcoin, the Ethereum.
Yeah.
But I and many others ran off into the wild world of altcoins. And, there was a project that has since gone on to exit scam. It's called Oyster Pearl. We'll talk about that in a bit and what that does to me. But at the time, this project, among their merits, which were several, I mean, it was legitimately like they were legitimately and now still are still building what they said they were building, which was like kind of a distributed, man, it was a three-way marketplace that connected consumer website visitors, website publishers, and people that wanted distributed storage. So it's this three-way marketplace. And anyway, I put some money in when it was at like, let's call it 20 cents.
Yeah.
And then, but they had the worst website and the worst logo. And at the time I was doing my second SaaS business. I'm a Suedo designer and I work with a team of designers. And one of my designers did a new logo and website for them. Just honestly, like not even thinking, we didn't even ask them permission. We just did it because I was holding like a few grand worth of tokens. And so it's in my interest to help this thing grow. And so I sent them the website and they gave me $5,000 worth of tokens. I sent them the logo. They gave me $5,000 worth of tokens. So they paid me $10,000 for this weekend job. Already I'm like, oh shit, you know, there's something here.
Yeah.
And the token went over the next few weeks, it went from 30 cents to $3. So it 10x. And I sold at about $3 and it kept on going up until to about 450 and then crashed down. But, you know, if you're following along, I basically got cleared like near six figures for doing this weekend design job. And I was like, okay, like I got to dig around here a little bit. So that was the genesis of Chainfuel. And, I basically moved some people over into this from my software business into the agency and use the money to hire a few more people. And we started doing marketing services like branding, identity. Then we started getting into PR and community management. So hired a team of remote kind of community managers, customer service. Think of it as like customer service, live chat reps.
It was a great time to do that.
Yeah.
Really, really great time.
Yeah. It was my fastest growing business for sure.
Yeah.
But then, you know, market dried up 2018. The service revenue was already kind of drying up a little bit. I like to create products. And so with my partner, we were looking at product ideas. We built one called, repurposed the name Chainfuel for it. And it was an anti-spam and analytics and CRM tool for Telegram group owners. So you can manage your Telegram group more effectively. We launched the free version of that. It's got about 800 users right now. We launched the paid. Well, before we launched the paid tier, we realized that, you know, there's a lot of competition. The market wasn't very big and it wasn't like solving a huge pain point. So we, but we realized we found a deeper pain in the Telegram ecosystem. And it was that like, you know, businesses, developers, investors, salespeople are starting to use Telegram for collaboration and for work purposes, but they're using Telegram apps that were designed for consumer chatting. You know, talking to your friends and family. There was no organization features, no like business process workflow, that kind of stuff. And so it was a very unorganized chat experience for these professionals. And so that leads us to the business that we're doing today, which is telefuel.com. And it's like a Slack style business chat app for the Telegram network. All that to say, you know, like, you know, you can't connect, as you know, Steve Jobs said in that Stanford speech, like you can't connect the dots looking forward. You know, it's impossible to see where any line or thread will go. But looking backwards over these jumps, it all came out of that crypto run up, you know, like,
for sure.
You know, this business doing, it's an exciting time in this business now with Telefuel, and it's not directly crypto. It's not a crypto business itself, but it's obviously crypto adjacent. And so it's very much a result of getting involved in crypto when we did. So no regrets there at all, even though the ride did come to an end.
Where are you guys at with Telefuel right now?
So we started coding about 6 weeks ago. We started onboarding our first beta cohort last 3 days ago or 4 days ago on Friday. So 5 weeks of coding to beta. So pretty quick pace. We have 65 people registered for the beta, 10 of them entered their credit card info already. So we have some paying customers pre-product.
That's awesome.
Yeah. We raised a seed round around it. First time taking outside capital. Yeah. Moving pretty quickly. I think we'll probably be in beta through mid-August and launch a paid 1.0 in August. So yeah, pretty pumped about that. Just because of how big the market is, I think it's the business that I'm, you know, my other businesses got to 10K MRR, then 15K MRR. And now with this one, we're looking at like a legitimate path to 7-figure ARR and honestly beyond. Like you could trace a line from here to 8-figure annual revenue and into 8-figure annual revenue and maybe more. So it's the first time I felt like I've been doing a business that has like a legitimate case for investment, legitimate need for the investment, but then also legitimate like upside for potential angels and maybe at some point, not set on it, but maybe at some point venture backing. So we'll see.
You are a serial entrepreneur. You've done a bunch of different things. What is your general advice for the younger dudes out there?
Man, it's always tricky to give general advice.
What do you think is the most important thing? What is the one thing? I think for me, I'll start just to get your creative juices flowing. I think for me, the most important thing is taking action, stepping out of your comfort zone and just making it happen. Just taking action, taking the first step. And then once you take the first step, you know what the next step is, and then you can take that step. So it's just taking little steps one by one. For example, this podcast. When I look at other podcasters and I see their audience, they're ginormous. You know, like the people that I really, really respect and admire, Tim Ferriss, Dave Asprey, all those big guys, I see their audience and it's really overwhelming. But then I think just taking one step, one little step every day, just taking action. So for me, I think taking action is very important.
Yeah, I love it. I think having a bias towards action is, you know, in any facet of life, not just if you want to start a business, but like, you know, if you want to get in shape or, you know, get your relationships in order or anything like that, you know, a bias towards action. I'm trying to think what else. I think something that's helped me put myself increase my surface area for luck is putting myself around a community of people that are doing similar things. Like you said earlier, you know, you're the average of the people that you spend the most time with.
Yeah.
And if you're trying to start something and you're isolated, you're culturally or from a lifestyle perspective, you're isolated in just, I was in the suburbs of Bethesda, Maryland for a little while before I moved to Chile. And it was like none of the people around me could empathize or could relate. And so it was, and if you're someone like me who is generally leans extroverted and I get my energy from other people, you know, that was really helpful for anything that you're doing. Or whether, you know, like fitness, there's so many analogies that you could draw, but like getting in shape was another journey that I started at the same time as my first business. I used to be like 35 pounds heavier than I am now. Surrounding getting into communities of people that were self-development oriented or growth oriented or entrepreneurs or, you know, active and healthy. It increased my surface area for luck and for continuing the habit. So that would be something along, you know, being action. Action bias,
community and the people you spend the most time with, that's so crucial. I 100% agree. And if you don't have those people, I feel like online communities, Facebook groups, forums, that's a great way. And then also books and podcasts.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Books and podcasts. Those are huge.
Mm-hmm. There's so many great resources out there. It's like, that's another thing. It's like knowing like who to, like which resources, having a decent filter for like which resources are like the top of the line versus which ones are just like, you know, some kid on an Instagram account, like, you know, managing it and, you know, trying to make some passive income of his own, no fault to him, but you want to, as much as possible, go to like the top shelf thinkers and the top to the source.
Yeah, for sure. But actually, I think that even going with that Instagram kid, that young kid that probably doesn't know what he's talking about, I think that's okay, because from that experience, you learn a little bit more. Maybe you'll learn a little bit more like SEO or internet marketing or Facebook marketing, and then you'll seek out more information, and then from there, it'll snowball.
Yeah. Just, I guess it goes back to what you're saying. Default to action. Don't worry too much about it being perfect or, yeah, it being
for sure, man.
The master plan.
Cool. Alan, where can people find more about you?
I have my personal site that you mentioned earlier, zenhustle.com.
I love that name, by the way, Zen Hustle.
Thank you. It sticks. People notice it.
I love that name.
Yeah.
It's like you hustle, but then you got to be in that flow state. You got to be Zen. You know, you got to clear your mind. I love that shit.
They balance each other out. And then I also realized, you know, much like you and I, you know, we are fusions of like Western and Eastern cultures in our own way, being Asian American, and Zen and hustle also mirrors that as well. Like, you know, Zen from the Eastern tradition and hustling is more of like a Western tradition. And so, you know, even the word itself, but the brand and then myself and you, like we are, you know, also that kind of fusion. So zenhustle.com, telefuel.com is my new Telegram power chat app. That's where it's at.
Cool, man. I'm really excited to see more content from Zen Hustle.
I appreciate that. More is coming. More is coming.
And you inspired me. You seriously inspired me, dude. I am probably going to do that 30-day YouTube challenge.
Dude, let me know. I got all sorts of, if you do it again, I'll do it again. I'll do it in August because I'm going to be traveling until July 23rd here in the US. So let me know.
All right. Good stuff, dude. Alan, it's been great catching up.